with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a great day to be alive, and it's a great day to be a better. Welcome inside the VSiN studios here at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. This is the Lombardi Line, presented by DraftKings on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there. You guys have one of the more important jobs that we have in our world here, and all the moms, we appreciate you guys every day, but especially on this day here, Mother's Day being May 12th. Michael, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing great, Femi. Yeah, it's Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers and the family makers. I know in my family particularly, you know, that it required her to be a mother, father, and everything because I was working all the time in this football world. But thank you to Millie, great mother to my two children and my grandchildren and all the mothers out there. And unfortunately, there's some of us that can't call their mother to wish them a Happy Mother's Day, but we are thinking of them and the memories that they have given us. I thought it was, it's a great day to celebrate.
100%. Mike Palm actually shared a nice Mother's Day poem with their show yesterday on Live Bet Saturday. At the end of it, I encourage anybody, VSiN Best Bets podcast, to go ahead and look it up. It was a really nice way
to wrap
that
he is. He's so good. I mean, there's nobody better than Mike Palm. He's a wordsmith. He truly is. It's incredible.
I told him that he should sell that poem to Hallmark or somebody to go ahead and put that in a card, and then we can go and make millions. Maybe we won't have to do the show.
Or maybe put it on the Hallmark Channel, make a movie out of it, right? I mean, Mike could produce a movie. He could be the star of that movie, too. Be the leading hero of it. Yeah, why not?
100%.
Why not? I mean, did you watch all the games yesterday, Femi?
I did.
Did you? Now, I know it's Mother's Day, and we're gonna have to sneak watching the games on today. But did you watch the NBA yesterday?
I did watch the NBA yesterday. And like my mother, she's still up in Seattle, so I'm going to give her the phone call on the way home from work. The games don't start till 12:30, so we'll do all the Mother's Day festivities and all that stuff prior to Knicks-Pacers starting later on this afternoon. But the games yesterday were interesting. A close one in the Western Conference between Oklahoma City and Dallas. And then last night, Boston was in control for much of that game. They're the Celtics getting back on track, taking a 106-93 victory to go up 2-1 in that series. And Jason Tatum, people have been asking for Tatum to step up. He stepped up in a big way, 33 points, 13 rebounds, 6 assists in the victory as Boston now regains control of that series in the Eastern Conference semifinals.
Well, I mean, I think when y'all watched that game, it was fairly clear. I mean, two things have to happen. Boston has to play poorly, and Cleveland has to play their best to win, right? I mean, This is just not an even series. This isn't about Bickerstaff not being the right coach. This isn't about Donovan, you know, him not being the great, Mitchell being a great player. This is about a level of disparity between the personnel elements of the team. And I think for Cleveland to win, which there's no way they're going to win the series, is Boston's going to have to play poorly. And Cleveland's going to, even when they play poorly, Cleveland's going to have to play their best game. To me, this is a mismatch. And I think the second game, like it happened in the Miami series, refocused the Celtics yesterday. And that game was never in doubt. Never in doubt. I mean, Brown was 13 for 17 from the floor.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about Tatum being great. I mean, Jaylen Brown was 13 for 17 from the floor. He played 41 minutes. He dominated the game. You know, he only missed three shots, and one of them was a three-pointer. So it included 9 rebounds. So, yeah, I thought that this is kind of a mismatch. And I think this is, if it goes 6, I would be totally shocked. How about you?
I don't know if I'd be shocked because the Celtics tend to have those lapses like we saw in game 2 of the Miami series and game 2 of this series. But I'd be shocked if the Celtics don't win the series. That's for sure. I don't see this going 7. I could see maybe 6 if there's a day where their 3-point shots are just aren't falling and they're kind of having like a lackadaisical sort of effort. But like you said, it's going to require Cleveland's best in that situation. Like Mitchell's going to have to do 35, 40 points. They're going to need more from Evan Mobley. They're going to probably need some more from Strus and LeVert and those guys. But Boston should win this series going away. You mentioned Jaylen Brown. After the game, he added a little bit of salt into the wound there for the fans out in Cleveland. They asked him about the urgency from the Celtics, and he said, quote, "We didn't come to Cleveland for the weather, so let's go." is what Jaylen Brown said after the game.
He's right. I mean, he's right. I mean, let's look, I lived in Cleveland. I love Cleveland. I love living in Cleveland. I really did. I loved it. You know, I'm an East Coast guy. I'm proud of New Jersey, but I did love living in Cleveland. But you're not going there for the sunshine all the time now. I mean, it ain't out all the time. It's gloomy. It's a little bit dark. It's going to rain a little often. And if it doesn't rain, you're going to get some snow. One thing about Cleveland, I will say this. When the weatherman says it's going to snow, there's a pretty good chance it's going to snow. Like here, not so much. But there, yeah, you're going to get it.
Listen up to the weathermen in Cleveland. I saw this stat, though. This was really good from Sean Grand, who I believe does some work for the Celtics. Yeah, voice of the Boston Celtics. And he tweeted this out, the best scoring differential. So the Celtics have now played 90 games this NBA season. They've won 70 of them, which is a really remarkable record. Their scoring margin, 11.4. That is the fourth best in NBA history, including the playoffs. The three above them were the 1971 Milwaukee Bucks, who won the title, the 96 Chicago Bulls, who won the title, and the 2017 Golden State Warriors who won the title. Is there a chance, Michael, that when we sit back and maybe when the season is over that we recognize the Celtics team as maybe an all-time great team? They don't have the all-time great player, but the collection of talent that Brad Stevens did a great job of putting together, Joe Mazzulla's done a great job coaching this team, they just have no weak spots when you watch them play. And when they're healthy, they really are a juggernaut this NBA season. And so far we've seen it in the playoffs when they're dialed in.
Well, the only way you recognize greatness is to win a title, right? I mean, that's all. Then all of a sudden, once you get into that category, then we start analyzing how great of a team it is. And credit Brad Stevens. Porzingis isn't even on the court. He's one of their best players. Brown, Tatum. I mean, look, they've done a great job of building to take Al Horford back after they let him go to Philly. I mean, it's been a really good job by them. They've got the role. They fixed the problems of last year. So I think if they win this, and look, it's not going to be easy because we know the West is always going to be challenging. I mean, Dallas is a really good team. The Thunder are growing up right before our eyes when we watch that series. And then, you know, we saw Denver that had the heart of the champion and come back and just whoop Minnesota the other night. It'll be interesting to see how Minnesota responds to that whooping. So I think the West is really prime. But someone told me the three best teams in the league really are Denver, Minnesota, and Boston. And I think that's right.
Yeah, I think that's definitely right based on what we've seen in the playoffs and also a little bit of what we saw in the regular season as well. I know OKC ended up getting the one seed in the Western Conference, but I think at their ceiling, Minnesota and Denver were the two best teams in the Western Conference. Maybe I'm disrespecting OKC, but that remains to be seen. Speaking of the Thunder, they fall to the Dallas Mavericks yesterday afternoon, 105-101, a really entertaining game. It was back and forth the whole way. I don't think there was a lead bigger than like six or so once we got to the second half, but Dallas holds off the Oklahoma City Thunder. PJ Washington, I was surprised by what he did in game two. He followed it up with a 27-point performance in game three, 11 of 23, 5 of 12 from beyond the arc. They didn't even get their best Luka Doncic game. He was 7 of 17, 22 points, but he was impactful on the glass with 15 rebounds. As the Mavericks now take control of this series 2-1, sort of putting Oklahoma City up against it heading to game four on Monday night.
Well, I mean, this was a rugby game, Femi. This is kind of what struck me at watching the game. I mean, they didn't call anything. And, you know, they've told teams that they're changing how they're going to call in terms of when a defender drives. Earlier in the year, when a defender was driving and there was contact in the clear way, in the path by the defender, it was going to be called a foul. Mm-hmm. And they went and told all the NBA teams that we're not doing that. The only person they're giving that call to now is Alexander. They've called that. And one of the officials in the game yesterday, I mean, he only called 3,000 in the fourth quarter. I mean, think about that. I thought that game was kind of a little bit of a rugby. They were beating up on Doncic. I mean, Dort could have fouled out in the first quarter. I mean, he fouled out at the end of the game, but he could have fouled out in the first quarter. I mean, their intent is to make it so hard for Luka that they wear him down and frustrate him. And then what we saw was the brilliance of Kyrie Irving. I mean, wow. You know, everyone has always said what a great player Irving is, and we've kind of let the off-the-field court, his commentary, interject into his true talent. And yesterday, I think you saw his true talent. And if Oklahoma is going to continue to put all the pressure and do what they're trying to do to Luka and leave probably one of the best one-on-one players in the NBA alone, they're going to pay for it. Because Kyrie, when he decides he wants to become offensive, wow. I thought that left-handed shot was incredible. And look, you know, I think the other factor is the strategy of fouling in the game when they're behind Oklahoma City Thunder. I mean, they got a break of it because Lively was 8 for 12, came back and made only miss 4. But this game should not have been as close as the score indicated because, I mean, they were 64% from the three-point line, the Mavericks. They were 16 for 25. And, you know, if they're better at their three-throw line, they're going to be much better. But, you know, I love watching Dallas play. I think they're really fun. And I like watching the Thunder. I just think, to me, you know, the way they're calling the game is a little unfair to Luka.
It's interesting that, like, from game to game within a series, just based on the officiating crew, you can get a totally different game. I thought we saw a little bit of that between Denver and Minnesota Friday night, to where it was a much tighter whistle with the Tony Brothers crew than what we had seen in the games in Denver, where they were letting physicality happen. Like, the T-Wolves were able to actually just kind of, like, press up on Murray and just sort of, like, just use their size to their advantage. That wasn't the case when they went home, which is usually you go home, you think you're going to get a good whistle because you're the home team. It was really ticky-tack in that game, and then Denver was able to kind of – I'm not saying the Denver won because of the officiating, but it at least helped them kind of get into a rhythm, more of a rhythm,
yeah,
to when they were able to kind of get some of those points offensively. So it's kind of – it's like I think almost think you got to figure out who's officiating these games before you really dive in and sort of scout those crews and what they usually call.
Yeah, and today, I mean, look, I thought the Knicks-Pacer game Friday night, was it? Was it Friday night?
Yep.
Was another rugby match. I mean, now I don't think it was a foul on Brunson late in the game when he tried the three-pointer. He was looking. I didn't think that was a foul, but you could have called fouls at numerous times in that game, and they just let him play. Look, I like it. I'm not complaining, but I think they crossed the line with Luka yesterday. I just kept watching that game saying, man, are they going to call anything on this guy? And, you know, they never did. Alexander got calls. He got 3 and 4. Fourth quarter, no one else did.
Yeah, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, he gets a lot of calls out there. But hey, he's a really great player, and I guess he's earned them finishing second in the MVP market. We'll continue to break down the NBA. We got JVT in hour number 2. He'll help us break down as well. But on the other side, let's turn our attention to NFL rookie camps. Those rookie QBs are on the field. We'll get our first thoughts on this next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Start your morning with a daily dose of winning strategies, insider tips, and the latest buzz with the free VSiN Daily Newsletter. In today's newsletter, you can see all of the plays for today's NBA playoff games. Go ahead and get you some of those tips before you bet the games later on this afternoon and evening. Get expert analysis and the latest odds delivered straight into your inbox, absolutely free. Visit VSiN.com/newsletter to subscribe. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Michael Lombardi out in New Jersey. Femi Abebefe here in downtown Las Vegas. Rookie mini camps already underway across the 32 National Football League teams. It's exciting to get those guys out there they're only in shorts and t-shirts, but still just seeing them in NFL helmets and colors and throwing the ball around. It reminds us that football's always around the corner. And in Chicago, everyone has all eyes on number 18, Caleb Williams, the number one overall pick in this past draft. And Caleb Williams already has been named the starter for the Chicago Bears. Matt Eberflus going ahead and says, we're not having these questions throughout camp. We're just going to go and get this thing done with right now and name Caleb Williams the starter. Is that a little surprising to you, Michael? Caleb, I mean, we all knew he was going to start, but we usually don't, even if it's the number one overall pick, they usually don't tell us until about August or so that they're going to be the QB1. But Eberflus said, let's just go ahead and get that out of the way right now.
Well, they signed no really veteran backup. I mean, if Caleb gets hurt, I mean, Bear fans, I hate to break the news to you, but Tyson Badgett isn't going to be able to win many games for you. I mean, they put all their chips into this, and I would have thought Ryan Poles would have had at least a veteran behind him. Not necessarily to nurture them, because I think that's a little bit of a more of a media hype than it is an actual reality, but somebody that the team, if it was going good, maybe could get you two or three games, which I don't think Badgett can. And certainly Brett Rypien has proven that he can't. So what options does he have? I mean, they're going to start the era, the Caleb Williams era, and making no bones about it, and move forward and give him every single rep, Femi, that they can possibly give him, which is a good thing. He needs every single rep. And so, yeah, I think the hardest part for a coach is Caleb Williams didn't earn the job. He was given the job, but I think the players will recognize his talent, which will make it a lot easier.
Yeah, we talked about during the draft process how Caleb Williams, the visit there to Chicago Bears was a little bit different than most visits. He actually met with the players, the veteran guys. You brought the point about how he has to sort of ingratiate himself to those guys and fit in with those guys to truly be a leader. And Caleb Williams was asked about leadership earlier this week at the rookie minicamp. And despite what's been out there about Williams and the fingernails and the cell phone and the wanting equity and all the noise that's around Caleb Williams, here's what he had to say about leadership and what he needs to know as a young player.
To be a great leader, you got to learn how to follow first. So right now I'm following all the vets. I'm following all the coaches. I'm listening, having both ears open and my mouth shut, just kind of sitting back listening. And then, when I get to the point when I learn everything, when I learn the ways of how we do it, the culture, the playbook, and what the offensive line, wide receivers are all doing, running backs and tight ends and things like that, then you can start taking the lead. Then you can start taking the helms of all of it and take the next steps. For right now, though, I'm listening more than I'm speaking and talking, and I'm taking it one step at a time, being the moment.
Yeah, well said. I think that's what you want to hear when you draft a guy number one overall.
Yeah, really good. Yeah, I mean, that's what he should be doing, and I think to me it's a good way to start a career. And, he's got Shane Waldron to coach him there and to see buy into the offense. It's all more than he can handle, right? The other thing is when you name him the starter, you don't have to mess around with trying to scale back the offense or trying to do things for two quarterbacks, which make it a little difficult. Look, he's going to need to get speeded up as quickly as he can. Adunze shows up, he's got, which a lot of these young players, when you see these rookie camps, guys that are held out because they've got hamstrings or those kind of injuries, what's happened during the process is you spend most of April not really working out because you're traveling all over the place. And so now you come into a rookie camp and you're not really ready to go, which obviously, lends yourself to have hamstring injuries and that type of thing. So, yeah, I mean, the more time he can spend with Keenan Allen, he can spend with DJ Moore, he can spend with Cole Kmet. I mean, I think that's really going to help him a lot. But they're going to have to make sure they can protect him because there's no one behind him.
Yeah. In case of any sort of injury, that's disaster situation for the Chicago Bears. So Caleb Williams saying all the right things so far, doing all the right things out there at Bears rookie camp. We'll see what happens when the veterans show up for the OTAs, the mini camp later on next month. Jerod Mayo, New England Patriots head coach, had interesting comments about Drake May. On his initial impressions, he said, quote, "He has a lot to work on, but I have no doubt he'll put the work in." We saw the odds move, and I thought this was really fascinating. We were talking about this during the break before we came back on the air. Earlier, Drake May was in that plus 300 range to be the week one starter for the New England Patriots. That got bet. It's now down to plus 190. You can get Jacoby Brissett at minus 250. So Drake May, who a lot of the experts said was a little bit raw, needs some more seasoning, maybe a little bit of time to redshirt before he steps out there onto the field. Somebody out there in the betting market thinks that maybe he's closer to starting than we all think.
Yeah, I don't see that, Femi. I think they signed Brissett for a plan, right? They gave him $8 million. They want him to be the starter. And look, it's going to creep up pretty quick, right? Because here's what you got to say. This is a rookie camp. There's nobody else out there with them, right? It's all just a bunch of young players that are going against there. It's the game's going to go slow. And I think what Gerard said is true. It's going to take him some time to get caught up to speed and go from there. But More than anything, I think there's got to be some sense of patience in terms of the development of Drake May, right? They've got to get their offensive line in really good shape. They've got to make sure the rest of the offense is. They're going to need to really, really be careful because you don't want to put him in there and get him hit and get him hurt and, lose a lot of time. Again, it goes back to player development. We talk a lot about this on the podcast, about how to correctly develop the young players. And the fans want to see Drake May play, which is reflective in the betting market, right? I think fans are trying to get him to play because there's a sense, well, we can't win with Jacoby Brissett. Well, you can win some games with Brissett. Now, you're not going to win a lot of games with Drake May taking over the team. He's going to have to play within a framework of the team, offense, defense, kicking game. Same thing with Brissett with more experience. So I think it's going to just need a little bit of patience on the Patriots' part. They named Elliott Wolf the vice president of player personnel, so they've cleared that up. Right. They kind of have their guy who made the draft picks involved. They've got Mayo to run the team. They got Wolf to run the department. So there they go.
Drake May right now 18-1 to win Offensive Rookie of the Year over at DraftKings, with the expectation being that he's probably not going to be on the field week one, despite what that move was made in the betting market. But I know we're on Nesson right now. We have a lot of New England Patriots fans who are watching and listening, and we appreciate them. They're probably asking, well, what do we need to see before we declare that Drake May is ready to start? Like, when do you know a quarterback is ready when they're early on in their career?
I think when they have the confidence of the team, right? I think when they can go in the huddle and really command the huddle and understand what's going on. I think it's more about their demeanor, their stature, their confidence, right? It's the, you know, most times the confidence because they're don't know. They don't know what to expect or what's going on. You know, and Caleb Williams is a very confident kid, and I think he can go into the Chicago Bear huddle with confidence. Drake May, I don't think is as confident because he's so young, and I think it's going to take a little bit of that confidence to get going. And I think that's what you want to see. You want to see confidence, and you want to see him improving every single day at practice. Accuracy, knowledge, just all the things that fans can't see. They just watch, you know, the clip of him throwing, and that becomes important. Look, New England's rebuilding their team. Last year, as I've said many times, if they had a better field goal kicker and they had a better quarterback, they probably would have won 7 games. But they are where they are. They've got to revamp this offensive line. They've got to hope they can play as well defensively as they did last year and move forward. But I don't think you want to rush a young player along that's not ready. And I just don't see May starting. I think the fans are reflecting in the line movement, not the reality.
Yeah, I mean, the fans, they're going to want the shiny object, and Drake May is that shiny object in the Foxborough area, plus 190 to start week one. J.J. McCarthy is the new object in Minnesota, plus 120. There, we're starting to see some of the clips from Vikings rookie minicamp, and then Bo Nix, minus 340, a heavy favorite to be the week one starter for Denver. Bo Nix recently signing his rookie contract, so he's officially a member of the Denver Broncos, and I sit there, I look at Bo Nix, he's going to start week one, or at least that's what we all think, but his price is still 16-1 to be Offensive Rookie of the Year. That just has to be market perception of him. Maybe the market thinking that he's not as good as Sean Payton and the Broncos think.
Well, I think this is reflective clearly of the perception based on what the draftniks think, right? Because the fans have to go by what Mel thinks, what, you know, Daniel Jeremiah, all that. And when you listen to what Sean Payton said just recently, you know, I think he came off the field wowed by his location of the football, his command, you know, and his ability to get caught up quickly within it, you know, is he was surprised how well-versed he was. And of course, you got to temper what you hear this time of the year in May because, you know, it's a little bit, they're trying to be positive about their team, but I think what Sean said coming off the field, I think he likes Nix. And look, if he can manage Nix and Nix does exactly what he wants him to do, then I think ultimately he'll be successful. I'm not saying he's going to be a superstar. I'm just saying he's going to be fit within a framework of the team.
Yeah, and that's the big thing right now. It's like I just see this is the guy who's going to be playing early. Sean Payton clearly is, I mean, sort of betting on his job on Bo Nix, saying, hey, like, this is the guy that I wanted all along. Let's go ahead and make this work. There's full investment from everybody in the organization. Yep. I think Bo Nix may be being slept on a little bit here, but I'm someone who's invested in Bo Nix in the past. All right, on the other side, comeback player of the year talk. It's a hot and heavy market. We'll break it down next year on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back. It is our number two of the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe in downtown Las Vegas. Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. If you missed our number one, make sure you check it out in podcast form. Just search the Lombardi Line wherever you get your podcast. We say happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there celebrating. And hopefully if you're watching or listening to us, we appreciate that as well, being a part of your special day. We celebrate moms each and every day, but especially here on Mother's Day. But we'll begin hour number two. We got a fun second hour for you guys. Jonathan Von Tobel, senior NBA analyst here for VSiN, will join us in 30 minutes to help us break down these NBA games. And let's start hour number two with the NBA, Michael, and get to what's on your mind. What about the association are you thinking about this morning?
Well, happy Mother's Day to all the mothers, especially the mother of my family, Millie, who's done an incredible job of raising two boys while I was working all the time, and appreciate all those efforts. And the mothers that aren't with us, we certainly miss them and remember them today. But I thought yesterday I had a kind of, I just sat there, I sat my fat butt on the couch and I watched the NBA, both games, right? Mm-hmm. And I watched them Friday night too, in between serving Bill Berman drinks, which is, you know, the perfect thing to do.
Must've been busy.
As he keeps saying, can I help you? But there's never any help. Anyway, because he has a drink in his hand. But besides that problem, the reality here is I watch, the NBA has becoming back to the when I was growing up, the 80s, and the physicality, and you're asking yourself, isn't that a foul? And so I started, after watching the games, I did a little research, and what's on my mind is apparently the NBA has told teams the path plays, and what that means is the defender now is allowed to maintain the path he's on. Earlier in the year, the offensive player could just dribble into the defender and the contact would be deemed a foul. Now they're saying that's not. They're saying they're not calling that anymore, which explains a lot of the things that I thought were fouls that aren't fouls anymore. Hmm. Now, one of the things that's pretty clear is they don't call this on Alexander, right? Joe Gobbs, the official, I think John Gobble, his name is. He called three fouls in the fourth quarter, all of them on the player guarding Gilgeous Alexander on this clear path that was supposed to not be called. So there's a little bit of, like, some players are getting it. Luka's not getting it at all. Luka has, I mean, he's getting the crap beat out of him. But I think, to me, that the NBA's physicality that they've allowed to return to the game, I kind of enjoy watching it. You know, I kind of enjoy watching it. And now that it's been explained to me what they're not calling, I understand it better. I just thought it was based on the recklessness and you know, was it the home crowd and all that. But I do. I enjoyed it. I thought the Dallas-Oklahoma game yesterday was physical as hell. I thought they were too harsh on Luka. For a superstar, they made that guy, they beat that guy up like crazy. But this is why they're doing it.
It really has been a turn that's happened, I think, since post All-Star break, but it's ratcheted up even to another level during the postseason, because right before the All-Star break, I'm sure you remember this, like, your guy Embiid went for 70, Luka went for 70 like a week later, and then people were asking, it's like, hey, like, what's with all the scoring? Are they, like, the officiating the game poorly? And the NBA secretly, they didn't announce anything. They just secretly said, we're changing everything. We're going to let guys actually defend. We're going to let the physicality happen on the perimeter, because they let physicality in the post, but nobody throws the ball to the post anymore, so it's almost pointless. But on the perimeter, no. You could never touch any. You could never touch anyone on the perimeter over the last handful of years. It's like, man, how do you play defense in this league? But then all of a sudden, they started to let that stuff happen, which is why post All-Star break, there was a run for, I think, about 10 to 14 days after the All-Star break, where, like, almost every under was cashing because the market hadn't caught up. The market wasn't aware that the NBA just flipped the switch overnight and said, we're going to let physicality happen. And then the market started to catch up a little bit. But even in the postseason, we've seen quite a bit of unders just because of familiarity and playing the same team over and over, but also they just let so much physicality happen, which I agree with you. As a fan of the sport, I love it. I love the physicality. I love making the guys have to work, showing a little bit of resistance on defense. Now, the problem comes in to where there's certain crews that are still calling the old way. like Tony Brothers' crew, they're still calling the touch fouls. So I as a better, you get a little confused of, hey, like, what should we be paying attention to? What should be, I guess, for the Tony Brothers game, bet the overs, perhaps. Maybe that's the look. But some crews are still calling the pre-All-Star break stuff, and most crews, though, are calling the post-All-Star break, where they're letting physicality happen on the perimeter.
Yeah, and I mean, look, what you always want in officiating, and you don't get it in the NBA, you don't get it in the NFL, is a level of consistency where 100%. You know what to be expected and how to be called, and you don't get that. Like today, we're going to see a physical game out of Indiana and the Knicks. I mean, that game was really physical. I don't think it was a foul. They didn't call it on Brunson on that three-pointer he tried to launch, but there were some times I thought guys go to rim. I thought Maxey never got a call going to the rim. But now that I understand this pathway here now, the way they want to call it, okay, fine. I get it. So move forward, and it goes on. But, you know, to me, it's made the games – the last thing you want is those ticky-tack calls. And I think, you know, what Dallas was able to do is they adjusted their game to it, right? And I think Boston was – my question watching these games, Femi – and I loved it when Hubie Brown, when they were talking about Lew Alcindor, formerly Lew Alcindor, now Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Mm-hmm. He was an assistant coach on that Milwaukee coaching staff, and they were talking and reminiscing about the great Kareem. And, like, where would Kareem play today? Like, where would Kareem play today? Like, would they throw the ball into the post anymore? You know,
I hope so.
You know, it's all pick and roll. Yeah, I would think so, because it's all, you know, every time I went in the post, it was a good chance it was going to get a play, you know, it was going to be a score.
You know what they would make Kareem do? They'd make him develop a 3-point shot is what they would do. I think they would say, hey, Kareem, like, we know you're big, you're tall, but develop a 3, even though what you're doing, the sky hook is automatic, but develop a 3-point shot because 3 is greater than 2. I think that's how they would make him play. Like you think about with all these guys, it's like they would just make them shoot more threes. That's what everyone's doing. Just when in doubt, shoot a 3.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I watch these games, and when you get behind, I know the 3 can get you back in the game, but the 3 can also extend. I thought it happened to Cleveland last night, right? Mm-hmm. Cleveland started launching threes, bad threes, right? I think there is a quality shot element that you have to really look at as a fan. Like, an open 3, okay, you miss it. Got it. But when you're trying to launch a 3 that's a contested 3, is that, and you're behind in the game, is that really the right shot? I mean, look, Boston, when you watch that game, the Mavs were going to get into the paint. The Mavs spent, you know, they took 91 shots inside the 3-point line, whereas Oklahoma City took 81. Now, Oklahoma City was 10 for 30 from the 3-point line, and the Mavericks were 11 for 33. Now, a lot of that was because they got second chance with offensive rebounding and all that. But the reality here is you got to try to pound some teams a little bit. Look, let's face it. This interesting play by the Thunder in terms of fouling, and the Mavericks got away with it, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they got away with it because Lively ended up making 4 in a row, and he was 8 for 12 from the free throw line. But as a team, they were 16 for 25, which really put them in a tough spot.
Yeah, if you can go ahead and identify someone who's not good at free throw shooting before that 2-minute little window that you can't do it, you should probably, to get back into the game, it helps to get the other team out of rhythm offensively. There's a lot of stoppages. I think that's certainly a way to do that, to go ahead and stop the clock there. I think that we would just see a lot more. The biggest indicator for me that the game changed, and this is not breaking any news or anything like that, but when you watch transitions, you watch a 2-on-1 or a 3-on-2, and back in the day, people would go towards the basket. Now you see guys flank out to the corner to go shoot it, to set up for a corner 3. And it's like, it's like, buddy, you got numbers. Get to the damn hoop. But everybody wants the 3 in transition. Yeah. And that's how they play now, which, I mean, hey, it's, you know, to each their own. I guess the math is what the math is. But I just find it funny. If you can get an easy 2, I guess 3 is greater, well, but you're still shooting.
Who took the shot? Well, who made the shot for the Pacers the other night?
Nembhard?
It was a clutch 3, and it was...
Yeah.
I mean, and it was from way out. And I turned to a very drunk Bill Berman and said, if he would have shot that in high school, he'd have gotten benched.
Yep.
Like, think about it, right? You know, that shot would have been, you're coming off. I mean, when I grew up, you're coming off the court. He made it, so they celebrated.
When he shot that, I was like, what are we doing? The shot clock was going down, so I guess he had to shoot it, but it's like a 35 footer and it's just nothing but nylon. Kudos to him for making it, but my goodness, that was a horrendous possession that they got bailed out on, and they won the game. And that's how it works.
They got bailed out.
What do you think happens
today? Give the Knicks credit, you know, where they have tonight. Well, they don't have Anobi. They don't have him in the game. I mean, that's going to be a hard one, right? Another game they're going to play. I mean, but they're resilient. I mean, let's face it. They are so resilient. It's not going to affect them at all in terms of they don't have this player or that player, you know? And so I think, to me, you know, Alex Burke returned from the unknown to play 21 minutes. He got 14 points for him.
Yeah.
I mean, look, Alex Burke, whatever you want to say about the guy, I've watched him. He was a Sixer. He can score. Now, he's not a great defender. That's why he doesn't play a lot. But, you know, he can score. So between he and McBride, that's where they did. I mean, Hartenstein played 39 minutes the other night. 39 minutes for the big guy. Hart had 18 rebounds. He got 5 minutes rest, which is typically he never does.
Yeah, 43 minutes is like vacation for Josh
I think
Hart.
To me, yeah, I think to me is... If Brunson shoots 10 for 26 again, and the Pacers were barely able to come out of it, then you got to believe the Knicks, he's not going to go 10 for 26 again. And I think ultimately that gives him a chance to, that gives them a chance, right? I think that does. And, you know, look, I mean, the Pacers, their defensive effort, you have to wonder if they can. If they're going to be able to play good defense. I mean, the Knicks were 14 for 27 from the 3-point line.
Yeah, no, I think
they shot 51.9% from the 3-point, and they lost, but they did.
The market's betting the Knicks today. This was 6 yesterday, 5.5 when I woke up this morning, and now it's sitting at 5 pretty much across the board. DraftKings still has a 5.5. So if you like the Knicks, DraftKings is your home to bet the New York Knicks. But market seems to be thinking that this is going to be a close game, and it's hard to argue. Every Knicks game is a close game, and I think that we're going to see this one once again go down to the wire. I think taking the 5.5 is a solid look here in this game, despite the Knicks being a little bit shorthanded. I think we'll get a close one out there at the Fieldhouse in Indianapolis. All right, on the other side, a little better's choice. Our producer Elliot has put together some good options. We'll discuss it next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, this is only a limited time, so you got to listen up. We're offering our annual subscription at an unbeatable price. Normally, it's $240. You can now get it for just $199. Sign up today, and we'll also give you an extra 2 months for free. That's 14 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day when you use promo code Lombardi. I mean, this is going to carry you all the way through the PGA season. We got the PGA Championship coming up next weekend, through the Stanley Cup Final, the NBA Finals, through all of baseball season. An NFL March Madness, and we'll be back here again next year with two more months on top of that. You're going to get the 19 hours of live programming. You're going to get the betting splits, the betting systems, everything your heart desires to become a better better. Become a better better at VSiN.com/subscribe. 14 months for VSiN Pro, only $199. Use promo code Lombardi when you sign up. I mean, I can't think of a better deal than that. We'll take advantage of it here on this day. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line.
You know, Femi, I think to me it's really important that, you know, when you understand and define what you're trying to accomplish. And in the betting market, you are no different than an analyst in the stock market. And so if you don't have enough data, if you're not going through as much information as possible, that was what I really took that when I read Billy Walter's book 2 months ago about how much time he was spending reading through all the clips of local papers, reading, gaining as much information, sorting it through, and having it at his fingertips, not necessarily listening to it, but collecting it and then processing it. And I think that's really, if you want to be successful in betting and you want to make a little bit of pizza money, you're going to need to get some advice, because I can promise you, I'm on top of the NFL every single day, and it's hard. And if you have other jobs, fortunately, it's my job to do that. But if you have other jobs, you know how hard it is to stay on top of that.
Yeah, that's perfect. Like, for like most people who have jobs who are just doing this as a recreational thing on the side, like, you don't have the time to network and learn other bettors and say, hey, you tackle college football, I'll tackle NFL, you tackle NBA. We can do all that stuff for you. So VSiN.com/subscribe, $199. It's less than 50 cents a day. Go ahead and help yourself out and subscribe at VSiN.com/subscribe. All right. You know, Michael, our producer, Elliot Bowman, is always putting together games for us. And one of our favorite games that we like to play, Better's Choice. This one is an NBA-NFL hybrid across a bunch of futures markets. Also have some props involved as well. But the first option is the New York Knicks to win the Eastern Conference at plus 450. Or would you rather bet on the Baltimore Ravens to win the AFC at plus 475? Which one would you like to choose?
I think I would rather take the Knicks at plus 450. I think it's going to be hard for Baltimore, and I don't say that lightly. I think obviously they have the MVP from two years, even though the guy, many thought he might be a wide receiver coming out. Nobody's brought that up in a while, have they? You know, nobody gets paid for that. If I'd have said that, I would have been ripped for like months, years.
You know,
I'm still getting blamed I'm still getting blamed for Jamarcus Russell, even though I wasn't in the room. I mean, you know, meanwhile, the MVP of the league twice was called a wide receiver, and nobody's mentioned a word to it. But I think there's some concerns about Baltimore in this sense. There's going to be a transitional period, right? They're going to have to get a new right tackle, whether it's Rosengarten or someone else, right? They're going to have to count on Ronnie Stanley playing at a much higher level. They were able to get his reduction of his salary down, right? And so they've got a lot of missing pieces there. I think the addition of Derrick Henry changes their offense into more under center, which I think is a good thing. But defensively, here's the concern. We talked about Mike McDonald going to Seattle and how I thought that was a positive. And Zach Orr only coached in the National Football League for 3 years. He played, but he's only coached for 3 years. And now he's got this huge, huge hole to step into in the shoes of Mike McDonald, who did a wonderful job. That's going to be a hard thing to do. And I think they're going to count on a couple players. They got to count on Nate Wiggins as a rookie to be good. They got to count on Trenton Simpson, who they drafted in the third round, to fill the Patrick Queen hole. And they've got to duplicate the pass rush. You know, and I think ultimately they ended up in 21, they drafted Odafe Owe. I think that's how you say his name.
Owe.
And, you know, and he was out all of last year, but they still picked up his fifth year, which tells you they believe. He's played 13 games in his NFL career in 4 years. He's got 13 sacks. So you know that he's done a good job of when he's on the field. The problem is he's never on the field. So I think there's a lot of concern. Since he's going to be better, Pittsburgh's going to be better. So I like the Knicks here more because of the uncertainty of how Baltimore's going to be able to handle the North.
Yeah, I agree with you as well. I'll put it this way. The top dog in the AFC is Patrick Mahomes. I'm not trying to go up against him anytime soon. The top dog in the Eastern Conference is the Boston Celtics, which, as good as they can be, they show you sometimes a little bit of a lackadaisical effort. And if they do that against a Knicks team in the Eastern Conference Finals, a tough-minded team, that could be a long series. So I'd roll my dice with the New York Knicks to win the East at plus 450. All right, this next one, Dallas Mavericks to win the Western Conference plus 250, San Francisco 49ers to repeat as NFC champions plus 250.
Well, I think it's always hard to repeat. I think the NFC, it's hard. I'll take the Mavericks at plus 250. You know, I think to me, to win the West, they have a chance, right? It's going to be hard, but they have two incredibly great players in Luka and Kyrie. We didn't talk enough about Kyrie. We didn't pay enough respect to Kyrie so far in this hour. We did in the first hour, but Kyrie was unbelievable. I mean, look, for all the conversation of the off-the-field antics and his quotes, the guy is playing at a high, high level. And if they're going to continue to attack Luka the way they have in the Thunder defensively, you know, and you leave a legitimately great, and I'm not talking about a good, I'm talking about an elite one-on-one player like Kyrie Irving, that left-handed shot he made the other day, you know, Femi, I'm sure you've made that before in your life, but it probably took a lot of time to get it done. I mean, that was an incredible shot, right? And so I think to me, I would go there. I love the 49ers, but I think the West is going to be tougher. I think the NFC is going to be tougher. Green Bay, Detroit, right? Philadelphia. I think it's a hard, hard thing. It's not a knock at San Francisco. I just think the level has been raised.
Yeah, I made that shot in the driveway with nobody guarding me before. I don't know if it counts for the same as Kyrie Irving.
Well, it counts. Yeah, you made it.
Yeah, hang the banner. I would reluctantly go Niners with that one at plus 250. The price is really short, but I just think that the winner of T-Wolves Nuggets is going to win the Western Conference. That's just my opinion, so I wouldn't want to bet that plus 250 on Dallas. This next one, Boston Celtics to win the championship minus 120. They're already odds on. Or the Atlanta Falcons to win the NFC South at minus 130.
Oh, I'm taking the Celtics. I have no belief that the Falcons are going to win the South. None. Because they haven't improved defensively. They have no pass rush. They were 29th in the league in creating turnovers. Like, you're not going to outscore people. We know this. The Miami Dolphins have proven it. You got to win with defense. And I think the Atlanta Falcons and Super Bowl winning general manager Terry Fontenot have over-evaluated their team. And they've let 2 years in a row, they've let an elite defensive lineman. Think about this for just a second, if you're a Falcon fan. Just a second, think about this. If Super Bowl winning general manager Terry Fontenot would have taken Jalen Carter last year, and then instead of Bijan Robinson, I love Bijan Robinson, but Algier is a good player. I'm not saying he's Robinson, but he's a good player. But just say he would have taken Carter. And then say this year he would have taken Murphy or Latua. Now you got a team. Mm-hmm. And then you've had Cousins. Now you got a team. Now you got two elite defensive linemen in your front, whether it's an end or whether it's a tackle. But again, he takes offensive players as if we're playing 7-on-7. Yeah. No chance. You're not getting me to bite on Atlanta. No chance. No. And it has nothing to do with them not hiring Belichick. It has everything to do with their team building.
I think after this season, you're going to have to start calling him NFC South winning general manager Terry Fontenot after this season.
No, I'll never do it. Look, you know, people say to me all the time, like Millie always says to me all the time, why do you root against the Sixers? I said, I don't root against them. I just know the outcome. Like, I just know what the outcome is going to be. Like, I'm not a fan. I know the outcome. They're not going to win, right? I know the outcome of Atlanta. They're not going to win the South. I know it. Like, they're not good enough. They have too many holes defensively. I spent my life looking at teams. Like, they're not good enough. You got to win with defense. You know, Todd Bowles will create, and when all of a sudden we got amnesia here. When has Kirk Cousins become a primetime great player? I'll wait for your answer.
You'll be waiting a long time on that one. Although I think the Falcons will win the South this year.
That's gotten thrown under the carpet. Much,
yeah.
That's gotten thrown under the carpet. Nobody talks about that anymore, do they?
No. Because we all watched Quarterback on Netflix last year, and we all grew to love Kirk Cousins. So nobody brings up the record in the postseason or in the primetime games. Now we like Kirk Cousins. Kirko chains. This next one, Denver Nuggets to win the series against the T-Wolves, plus 165. Bengals to win the AFC North at the same price.
I'll take the Bengals. I love the Bengals. I really do. Because I like Lou Amoromo. I'm not in love with what they do offensively. You know, I think to me they got to play with more power. I'm worried about their offensive line. Is it Mims at right tackle, or is it going to be Trent Brown, who's very talented? Trent Brown is extremely talented, but Trent Brown is lazy, and Trent Brown doesn't always love football. Concerning, right? But with Burrow back, Burrow can move this thing. And what I can't see happening, and if I were to advise Zach Taylor, their head coach, Zach, we can't start slow. You better upgrade the preseason a little bit, because you can't be 3-4 in week 8 of the season.
What we say our rule is, we can't judge the Bengals until Halloween. Like, we made that a pact on the GM shuffle, because they start so slow that they're not fully formed in September just quite yet. All right, we'll have JVT, our VSiN senior NBA analyst, join us next to break down the NBA playoffs here on the Lombardi Line.